Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you'll need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of the Fightful Boxing Podcast. It may be the last podcast, or at least the last Fightful Boxing Podcast you may hear for a while. We'll get into all of that in just a second. Obviously, you must, to those listening, obviously you've heard the coronavirus has been hitting the world. You know, everyone and everything has been affected in some way, shape, or form. Boxing is no exception to that. We will definitely get into all of that because there is a lot to dive into the coronavirus situation. But I didn't want to do this alone. So I bring up an old friend. You longtime listeners to the Fightful Boxing Podcast may remember him. I called him one of my favorite podcast guest co-hosts I've ever had, and I still stand by it today, and I couldn't have asked for a better person to join me. Marquise Johns is back here on the Fightful Boxing Podcast. Marquise, how are you doing?
Pretty good, Carlos. Stocking up on toilet paper, viney sausages, and top ramen for this pending coronavirus shenanigans. It's out there. It's nuts.
Oh yeah, I was lucky that that I bought like this giant stack of toilet paper. I didn't like hoard anything. It was just literally one giant stack of toilet paper. It was like it's like 24 rolls, but the way they kind of packaged it is like, like each roll is equivalent of four regular rolls, so it's technically like 96 rolls, and I bought that like last week before things really got crazy. And it wasn't even, oh, we need to stock on toilet paper. It was just we just happened to buy toilet paper, and I think we're gonna be set for the next 2-3 months, maybe even more.
Yeah, it's nuts, Carlos. Like, I didn't realize the run on toilet paper was going to be that rampant around here. Like, the last time I've seen it, even, like, living here in Florida, like, even during hurricane season, stuff like this doesn't just deplete the shelves and in such random fashion. And, like, pretty much the stores around here, they've all replenished at this point as we're recording this. But for the most part, like, earlier during the week, you would have thought, like, this was, like, something out of, like, every bad apocalypse movie, or, like, 28 days later with, like, there's no more toilet paper. Oh, he has the last roll, and like people are like starting world star hip hop fights over it, and it's nutty stuff. But it's just signs of the times, and people just over panicking, and it's just the country. It's a country we live in. It is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, and the world, the world of boxing has just been getting hit. Real, real hard. I think, you know, you can check out the latest Fightful Boxing newsletter on Fightful.com, where I think I did a pretty good job rounding up a lot of the shows or the boxing companies that have announced that their upcoming cards have been postponed, canceled, moved, whatever you want to call it. I think, you know, the three big ones to sort of get out of the way. So we are recording on March 14, and today we were supposed to have the first of two Madison Square Garden shows by Top Rank. And that this one was going to be headlined by Shakur Stevenson versus Miguel Mariaga. And the other one was a PBC show taking place later tonight between Marcos Hernandez and James Kirkland. And those two shows have been postponed. Top Rank has also postponed the March 17th show. That's also going to be at Madison Square Garden. It was going to be the Michael Conlon's, you know, annual St. Patrick's Day show. And Golden Boy Promotions, by virtue of the California State Athletic Commission, basically nixing any large gathering above 250 people. It's Golden Boy Promotions announced that they have also postponed their March 19 and March 28 shows, both of them taking place in California. So, amongst other things, just a lot of small shows, you know, Murphy's Boxing. There was an Abrams Boxing card right before we started recording. Got an email. Abrams Boxing, their show got postponed. That was supposed to take place tonight, and a lot of other stuff. Interestingly enough, Marquise, the one company that has not done anything, or at least the one major show, major promotion that has not done anything, or at least announced anything, is Matchroom Boxing. And as far as, you know, you and I both know, they have a big card in Maryland on April 17. And I contacted them and they said, you know, we don't got anything. We don't have any news going on. They reached out back to me and said they have not made a decision regarding, you know, the Maryland show or any of the UK shows. And I find it hard to believe that those shows are going to keep moving as planned, at least the ones coming in the next month or so.
Absolutely, especially if it's in the United States. Pretty much this country's going to be on lockdown for at least the next 30 days. It all snowfalled, as you well know, once the major sports, once the NBA and the NHL said, hey, we're not going to play anymore, and then the NBA player Rudy Gobert got infected with it. It's at this point, it's become self-quarantine and self-preservation for everybody. Also, let me throw in as well, amidst the hundreds of cards you just mentioned, Raging Babe came out with her announcement as well for her card, which is going to be on the Impact Network at the end of the month. That was supposed to be in Philadelphia. That got canceled. And it's interesting with all these cards falling by the wayside. I know Eddie Hearn earlier this, I want to say early Friday or early Saturday morning, came out on his IFL network and pretty much said, hey, the fight card has a 50-50 shot. I have family in D.C., Carlos, and my sister told me flat out, this city's going to be on lockdown. Good luck getting up to Oxon Hill for that fight card. So she told me to stay away because I put in a credential for it for Pro Greyes Hooker. And if she's telling me no, I'm pretty sure that 50% is going to be a no on that end as well. So I'm interested to see how they're going to keep these fights actually even going on in the States. I know we had the Showbox card last night. We'll talk about it in a moment. And also with a couple of the, because they announced as well on that Showtime card, a couple of future cards at the end of the month that they haven't exactly nixed either. So I'm intrigued on how they're going to do a lot of those broadcasts. Also with these shows currently being in pretty much in limbo, the big one as well with the Zone, because the Zone was supposed to have had to roll out too, Carlos, of mentioning finally Canelo versus Billy Joe Saunders, you know, boxing's worst kept secret at this point, for May 2nd. And Vegas is pretty much on the fence about stripping down and closing their casinos down. And if they're closing their casinos down, one of those casinos that's going to close down, of course, will be the one holding this fight at May 2nd on Cinco de Mayo weekend at the MGM Grand. So I'm really intrigued on how Eddie Hearn, despite all of this, is keeping it sunny side up in terms of, well, the fight must go on. I don't think it's going to be up to him at the end of the day if it's going to be actually going through or not.
Yeah, that's also another one. I did contact the Nevada State Athletic Commission on Thursday. They didn't reach back to me. I'm assuming it's because they have not made any decision yet, and it's, as you mentioned, it is crazy. I don't think that, you know, I guess we can break it down like card by card. So you mentioned that Regis Prograis Maurice Hooker card. Uh-huh. That card, you know, I was really looking forward to that card because that card was going to be real good. That was going to be loaded. But, you know, when you compare it to a lot of the other US-based shows, you know, this was the Prograis Hooker card. I mean, aside from the main event, a majority of the fights were, or at least of the Matchroom guys that were going to be fighting on this card, they came from Europe. So there was no, so with the travel ban, you know, regardless of what happens, it's close to impossible to imagine a scenario where even after the travel ban is lifted, which I believe is, you know, right at the week before fight week for that card is, I find it very hard to believe that they're just going to, you know, assume that that card is going to stay intact for April 17. I mean, I think Eddie Hearn is being very generous when he's saying 50-50. I think it's closer to like 80-20 that his upcoming shows are going to be, or they're going to have to be moved, because there's no way he's going to hold those shows with no spectators. I find it very hard to believe that a major show, or at least a show from a major company, is going to do that.
I believe that as well. I don't think DAZN or Matchroom Boxing in general is looking forward to holding these shows with just essential personnel and no one around for any crowd interaction or crowd noise. Because that's kind of like the basis of if not 95% of these Matchroom shows, is the atmosphere. You hear the ones like, the one last week out in Manchester. You hear them all singing the Sweet Caroline song and all that nonsense. And there's no way around that. That's just the way their shows are built up. It's also interesting because I want to say, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, because I don't want to be completely wrong with the factions on this travel ban that the U.S. President has put on this. It's a 30-day travel ban for pretty much a majority of the European countries coming in and out. So in order for that 30-day ban for this card, which I think for Grayus Hooker would have been April 17th, that means unless Eddie Hearn's on that first plane coming back here today, which he's not, obviously, I don't know how it's going to take place, because he would have had to come coming over this way as well, because at some point make the announcement for Billy Joe Saunders and Canelo Alvarez, and they're still stalling on that. So I don't know how he's keeping it so positive in what looks very bleak of a majority of these fight cards being shut down and being locked up. I'm also looking forward to as well the way especially in the States here, Carlos, and I'm thinking as time goes on, we'll finally have an idea or at least a general perspective of how the country's going to actually but in terms of actually handling the epidemic in terms of care and people and being out in public with hordes of people and crowds, because pretty much they're shutting down anything, especially in California, anything over 250 people, which actually is pretty funny. There was an old joke, if you're on boxing Twitter as well, the first running gag when Golden Boy canceled their shows last week about the ones in Fantasy Springs was the easy layup joke was, there's 250 people going to these shows? Of course. Yeah. But all sarcasm aside, it's really a serious issue. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how Hearn's going to either relocate these shows, because even Top Rank came out late yesterday with the Better Be of card, which is in Canada, for Christ's sakes, with Meng Feilong. They're talking about relocating that card elsewhere. So if you're moving those cards that are just, you know, up north, it's going to be just beyond the U.S. here with just these fly cards in general. It's really interesting, but I'm really saddened too, because as you know, I got the credential for, I applied to get to a credential for the card that progressed. Look at that. That progress hooker card, Carlos, was pretty stacked. I was willing to travel up there for this one. And now that's more likely falling by the wayside. It's just like, man, it makes for a great summer in general. Actually, Carlos, I'm going to throw this by you. If you think about this, they're going to end up having to push all these cards back more often than not. The way it's setting up, this is going to make for a great late summer after the Olympics, because the Olympics are still going to be a thing more than likely. If all these cards get rescheduled to either like late July after the Olympics or early August, where they try to cram all of these fights together to make up for lost time, I'm looking forward to that part of it more than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a very optimistic way. And I do kind of agree. But that's, obviously, I think for both of us, we're assuming that this things get calm down just a little bit and, you know, within a couple of months or so. And even then, that's still, again, that's still being a little bit optimistic. We're still learning a lot about the coronavirus, COVID-19, and just how it's going to affect. I mean, really, the big fight that I think a lot of people, as you mentioned, were waiting on the announcement was Canelo versus Billy Joe Saunders. It's for May 2. I think at this point, if your Golden Boy promotion is your Eddie Hearn, because Eddie Hearn promotes Billy Joe Saunders, even if the Nevada State Athletic Commission says, okay, we feel confident enough that this virus, this pandemic can at the very least can be calmed down, this whole situation can be calmed down just a little bit and things return to at least some sense of normality by April. Mm-hmm. You still have to actually start the promotion, and because they hadn't announced the card or the fight, and we're now in mid-March, there's no way that DAZN is going to be wanting to promote a fight like a Canelo fight, which is only weeks notice. Not just that. if you really think about it, this is the most difficult fight for DAZN and Golden Boy to promote. And as far as the Canelo fights that we have out of on DAZN, aside from Rocky Fielding, this is an incredibly hard sell for boxing fans, because as you know, boxing fans in the US don't have much of a high opinion of Billy Joe Saunders.
Not at all.
He has not performed well in his title run at the WBO super middleweight champion. And in reality, I mean, look, I think we have enough evidence to believe that, you know, Canelo has not been the massive draw for DAZN that, you know, we've all thought, or at least DAZN thought, because let's be honest, DAZN prior to this coronavirus outbreak, they were kind of teetering around close to a million subscriptions. And Canelo prior to that was doing a million pay-per-view buys in his last three fights against Golovkin, the two fights against Golovkin, the one fight against Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., uh-huh. and fights against Jacobs, fights against Kovalev. They don't bring that same level of attention to DAZN as they hope. So, you know, from a business sense, I look at this fight and think, even if they get the green light to do it on May 2nd, even if it's Cinco de Mayo, you have to think we're just throwing away money if we're advertising and promoting a Canelo fight with only a few weeks notice. If I were Golden Boy, DAZN, Matchroom, I would hold this fight off until July, at the very least.
That makes sense on my end too. And it's weird because, as you know, it's one of those things we've seen, like these live shows now that always talk about, you know, we can hold the fight without any studio audience or any fans or whatever have you. And it's funny because there's no way that DAZN is going to eat pretty much Canelo's fight contract, which I think is still $35 million a fight. They're promising Billy Joe Saunders, I want to say at least, I'm assuming about 8 to 10 for his fight. That's about $40, $45 million there alone. That money's got to come from somewhere, and that's usually where the live gate comes in. So there's no way that they're just going to hold this fight and to promote it and to hope that people will come to it. And with these last few Canelo fights, Kovalev was not a big draw. That showed at the gate when they came through. The Jacobs fight really wasn't that big of a draw as well. I remember Golovkin saying that because he was there for it. He remember saying it was boring. I mean, that's been kind of the status quo for some of these Canelo fights too. It's almost an impossible sell, Carlos, to be honest with you, where it's like, you would think with Saunders, and if you've seen one Saunders fight in the last 5 years, you've seen them all at this point, and it's kind of the same issue, and his title run currently isn't that interesting. It was more interesting the fact his last fight that was on the zone with the KSI Logan Paul part two, was that the fight lasted about 10 rounds longer than it was supposed to, and the guy that he was facing, I want to say it was Marco Soraya, someone said, I could be wrong on the name, but that fight lasted way longer than it anticipated, and it was like, okay, well, what's going on here? Because it was essentially supposed to be like one of those cards, it's supposed to be a spotlight card for him, and that wasn't the case that went down at the end of the day. And with Canelo fighting on May 2nd, he's been steadfast on that, it's going to have to be pushed back unless they hold it in Mexico, which has, you know, still has fight cards going on currently until something happens otherwise. Unless they relocate it there and put it there, I don't see it happening any other way on Cinco de Mayo weekend.
Yeah, but then you still have to deal with the problem that the ban, which originally was supposed to be for most of Europe except for the UK, that travel ban has also now been extended. This, I believe it was this morning they announced that the travel ban has been extended to the UK. So that's still also. So you're also now – you're still trying to hope that after the travel ban's done, that's it. There's nothing else beyond that. So that's still a massive leap of faith. I mean, I get it. It's – you want to try to, you know, take advantage of a Cinco de Mayo. But look, it's way too close, you know, after the travel ban. It's still in a time frame where – things are a little bit dicey. If I'm being perfectly honest, I don't really see these fights in March and maybe even April not happening. I hope I'm wrong. I hope that, you know, maybe through March is when these cancellations and these postponements will get to, but I don't feel that confident. I mean, look, maybe a week ago I would have said, you know, I really don't think it's going to affect that much. But the way I look at this is, you know, once Rudy Gobert, the Utah Jazz player, tested positive for Corona, and, mm-hmm. and let's be honest, I don't want to say he deserved it because no one deserves this, but yeah. he was a real jackass for minimizing the importance of being safe, of taking care of yourself. The Utah Jazz were basically doing coronavirus prevention, or like they were trying to help minimize the spread or the risk. And Rudy Gobert just pretty much was just touching every single thing that was next to him within his proximity. And turns out he was the first NBA player to be tested to test positive for coronavirus. But
yeah,
it seems like when that happened, I think a lot of people in the U.S. start to realize, oh God, this is real, because unlike say stuff like swine flu or like SARS, we didn't really see like pro athletes left and right start to test positive for those. But when it comes to the coronavirus, you got Rudy Gobert testing positive, and then the next day Donovan Mitchell, also of the Utah Jazz, he also tested positive. So when that happened, when you see a public figure and an athlete for an NBA team test positive, and the NBA responding with, we are suspending the entire season, I think that made it real for a lot of people. And I think a lot of people realize this is not going to go away in a week. And I look at boxing and I think boxing is being a little too optimistic and thinking, you know, they haven't even announced. There's a couple of shows. You mentioned the Better BF Meng Feilong card at the end of the month. The Luis Neri was going to fight on Showtime in Las Vegas at the end of the month as well. Yeah. You know, they have not moved. They have not postponed those cards or anything like that. I think they're still being a little too optimistic with that. And honestly, if I'm these major promoters, if I'm Al Heyman, if I'm Bob Arum, if I'm Eddie Hearn, Oscar De La Hoya, if I'm all those people, I would start preparing for the next 6 weeks, 6-7 weeks. I'd say until Cinco de Mayo, and Cinco de Mayo weekend, I would say don't assume those cards are gonna move forward as they are presently laid out. I don't know about you, but I think I would say just start proactively moving your cards to another date, at least until after Cinco de Mayo, because there's no way you can really do business with it and still believe that everything's going to be all right within the next month or so.
Yeah, in terms of any of these current fight cards that are currently on the slated board now, because it's funny, because I think Gray Johnson of the Unprofessional Boxing Podcast and Boxrec as well was laughing hysterically like the last 40 hours about people are still adding fight cards on in the U.S. And it's like, I appreciate the sunny side up and the optimism, but at the end of the day, this is a bigger issue. And with the basketball players getting it, of course, it removes that idea of that is this not just, you know, there's a level of invincibility that's completely gone from this. That's the bigger issue of a lot of this coronavirus stuff and pretty much the whole panic in this country. It's going to take at least, like you said, at least till Cinco de Mayo for it can be cleared out. Like anything in April, Carlos, I've already pretty much conceded and made plans elsewhere. I'm looking forward to looking at best of stuff for a lot of stuff. Like if you look at Carlos, ESPN, for example, ESPN has no content right now. There's been no sports being played. The last thing was a Showbox card last night. They are literally doing, you know, top 10 stuff until they can do no more top 10 stuff until they run out of top 10 stuff. So at this point, they're looking for alternate routes. And, like, I think boxing needs to do the same thing, either in terms of actually pushing these fight cards back to obviously a later day, which is going to have to happen, or at least until they got a sense of idea from either the CDC and pretty much our government letting us know that everything is going to be at least manageable, or at least they have some sort of treatment in place for this virus, because that's been the bigger issue too as well, is that there's no treatment. There's been a couple of tests, but apparently there's not enough tests for it, so we don't know who still has it, who doesn't have it. There's been stories about we won't know cases of people who have it until 2 weeks after the fact. I mean, that That's cool if I was working at a day job, you know, that gets paid bi-weekly. But in terms of having an actual flu sickness, it's a little rough. So we'll see how it all plays out. But it's one of those wait and see methods that we have to, got to deal with in the meantime. So it always stinks because with us being boxing guys, it's like, oh, well, we got to find fights to watch. And it's like, well, there's no fights to watch.
No, there isn't. I mean, you look at all these fights that are coming up. And by the way, we mentioned a whole ton of boxing cards that have been postponed.
Flushed out.
And we are only just scratching the surface. Like, the amount of boxing cards that were postponed or being moved, it's crazy. I can tell you, I've said this on Twitter, and I can tell you this, at least on Thursday, the day after Donovan Mitchell tested positive, or I believe it was that Thursday, I have that whole 24 hours, I have never in my 8 years being involved in sports writing or sports media, I've never had a 24 hours quite like this ever. And I'm pretty sure I feel comfortable saying that you've also never seen a 24 hour period quite like this. It's bizarre. I mean, and the U.S. is not the only country that's being affected. I mean, Japan they announced back in February that all shows through April 15 have been canceled, and which is a real shame because they were going to have Junto Nakatani versus Kiamel Magramo for the WBO flyweight title.
Oh,
that
man.
Kosei Tanaka, the one that Kosei Tanaka vacated, that fight was going to take place at Corican Hall on April 4. That's not happening. You know, they canceled they postponed a couple of Matchroom Boxing Italy shows. One of them was going to be for the interim WBA lightweight title. So I guess if there was one small victory is that we don't have another WBA title. I guess that's the only real thing that I can. I mean, I don't even know how the hell that card. I don't even know how the hell you can justify making an interim WBA title on the line for that one, or just creating one. It's ridiculous.
The only thing more ridiculous about the standard WBA regular title, which you get when you get, you know, three tires and an oil change, is the fact that I think they made earlier this month as well, you mentioned that Manuel Char and Trevor Bryant are actually having a title bout at some point that Don King put a purse bid on. I remember talking to you last podcast I was on with you about this fight, and I'm laughing even more just talking to you about it now, thinking like, I don't know what's more implausible. These fights going through coronavirus, or this Don King purse bid that he won for this fight between two guys who haven't fought combined within like 4.5 years for a heavyweight title belt, which I think is the WBA, I want to say gold and minor or so world title. Whatever on that part. I don't know what's more impossible at this point, but it always cracks me up. But like, yeah, seriously, like, especially with these Matchroom Italy shows, I forgot all about that, because pretty much Italy is under complete shutdown where people can't leave the house, where people are being, you know, arrested about it, where apparently it's really something out of World Wars. And for my personal opinion, like, it, to answer your question that you mentioned beforehand, this is, in my terms, the biggest terms of like shutdowns. I've never seen it, anything like collapse this hardcore. And you talk to me, as you know, Carlos, I live here in Tampa, which is supposed to be the site of WrestleMania 36 here in Tampa at Raymond James Stadium, where the football team, the Buccaneers, play. And the biggest contention here between Tampa City Council and Vince McMahon is the fact that they're trying to figure out who's going to cancel this bout first. City Council is putting it on the mayor. The mayor is putting it on Vince. Vince, as we all know, is all about letting the show go on, and
giant game of chicken. It's ridiculous that we are at this point where the show is still technically currently
an option.
It's like technically the show is still set for April 5th, and it's ridiculous. Vince McMahon should know better, but I don't expect him to know any better. I don't expect him to be the one to pull the plug. I think it's going to be the city of Tampa. It's ridiculous. I mean, all the WWE superstars that were present on SmackDown last night at the WWE Performance Center, who did a show without any fans whatsoever. Bless the wrestlers who are going to be on Raw, because they're going to do the exact same thing. They're also going to have a no fans show, an empty arena show for Monday Night Raw at the Performance Center in Orlando. It's It's, you know, when it comes to that, that's like the only major sporting event, like on an international scale, that is still happening within the next month. And I say it was still happening. I mean, it's not been canceled or postponed or rescheduled or whatever. That's just pretty much been a giant game of chicken. It's really going to be who's going to be the one to balk first. Is it going to be Vince? It's not. It's going to be the city of Tampa that's going to be forcing WWE to shut down.
Yeah, and that's pretty much what's going to happen at this point, because essentially in town, personally here, like everything like major-wise has been shut down. Like the big thing here, like the big theme park here at Busch Gardens, that's closed off. There's been a couple of smaller things. Like today would have been like the town's big St. Patrick's Day parade downtown, which believe it or not, if you live in Tampa, it's actually a bigger deal than I forgot. That's been completely shut down and off the map, which brings a lot of money in like locally for city stuff, like for city projects. So you're canceling things left and right here in town, much like everybody else in the country. So it's only a matter of time. I'll give it by the end of next week that the city council will pull the plug in as well. Only because there's too much of a liability and there's too much of a risk involved with all of it. I mean, it's Vince and I get it, but I don't know how many more of these studio wrestling performance center shows they could keep pulling off in the meantime at the performance center out in Orlando at Full Sail before they realize that it's not going to bring any at the end of the day, it's not going to bring any revenue in. I know it's because they have the $1 billion Fox contract, and I guess either Fox didn't, well, I don't know if Fox has that much of a say-so on stuff like that. At the end of the day, if there's no show for WWE to put on for Fox, they'll find some. Fox has other shows. They can rerun The Masked Singer or whatever have you on there. But it's one of those deals where it's like, if there's no program.
Hey guys, have you ever wondered what happened to the legendary Chuck Norris? I saw a video he made and I was shocked. He is in his 80s, still kicking butt, working out, staying active. He looks like he's got more energy, can work out longer, even has plenty of that energy left over for his grandkids, and he did this by making one change. He said that he still feels like he's in his 50s. His wife even started doing this thing too. She's never felt better. She says she feels 10 years younger, her body looks leaner, has energy all day. And Chuck's made a 20-minute video explaining step-by-step how anyone can do this same thing to see incredible changes in their health. Staying active is important. Moving around keeps you feeling good. Making sure that you take care of your gut health, your digestion, just overall, is also very important. Right now, you can go to mymorningkick.com/Fightful. Watch Chuck's video right now. That's mymorningkick.com/Fightful. Check out what Chuck Norris has to say. What's got him feeling so good these days? He explains everything and you won't believe how simple it is.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop. And even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand. And even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
I mean, with stuff like that, you have to find alternate means, alternate routes. And I'm thinking especially with the WWE not the size of all this stuff, it's just the way that Vince operates, and at some point someone's just going to just pull the plug and keep it moving.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've pretty much exhausted the coronavirus situation.
Yeah.
There's also a few things that, believe it or not, that in terms of boxing, there's still a few topics to discuss that has nothing to do with the coronavirus situation. And really it's stuff like Matchroom Boxing signing Zelpha Barrett. I think that's a big deal.
I don't know how that fell under the radar yesterday, and how did Frank Warren let this man just go? I don't know if this is Hearn being Hearn as usual, just signing away everyone from Queensberry again despite Frank, or...
I don't know. By the way, when I say Zelpha Barrett going to Matchroom is a big deal, I'm kidding. It's really not a big deal. I mean, good for Zelpha. He's going to be fighting tentatively on the Dillian White card on May 2nd. It's touch and go whether or not that's actually going to happen, but
Yeah, well,
you know, we'll see. But yeah, I mean, just to kind of give you an idea, just like how much the sports world, you know, the boxing world have been dominated by coronavirus. Aside from the Showbox card, the last couple of days, literally the two biggest pieces of news that I could find was Zelva Barrett going to Matchroom and the WBA ordering a title eliminator between Hiroshige Osawa and Hector Garcia. So,
wow.
That's it? And it's, they called it a featherweight title eliminator, but of course they never specify which featherweight title. The last day or so, in terms of non-coronavirus, non-showbox, those are the two biggest pieces of news. It just kind of goes to show. It's been a very bizarre situation that we've had in boxing, but we've hinted at the Showbox card long enough, and I think that this card that we got that we had yesterday in Hinckley, Minnesota, maybe it's because we like the distraction. Maybe it's because we know that it's not gonna be we're not gonna see any live boxing in the U.S. for a long time potentially.
Yeah.
I thought this show was really, really good for a Showmax card. This had to be one of the better Showmax cards in a long, long time. You know, we saw great prospects. Brandon Lee dominating in the main event. We got two very close, very competitive fights that, you know, really could have been anyone's by the time we got to the scorecards, more or less. I don't know about you. I thought this was a solid, solid card considering who were fighting and what our expectations were.
For a Showbox card, this may have been off recent memory. This may have been the best Showbox card I've seen probably in a long time. Mainly because, Carlson, as you know, with a lot of these Showbox cards, for more often than not, they're pretty much spotlight cards for the A side. I've grown to hate using the word A side and B side for all these fight cards, but essentially, the favorites that are, you know, endorsed by either Salta Promotions or whoever the promotions for the fight cards itself, it's pretty much been like a showcase card for a lot of those guys. And honestly, the only pessimist and devil's advocate with you on this fight card, the only problem I have with this fight card, honestly, up and down, was the fights were fine. The judges, without a doubt, butchered these scorecards. But I mean, that's boxing in a nutshell. It's kind of funny I mentioned this to you. It's a typical boxing night, by the way, when you think about it. Out of the four fight cards we got, and I'm just going to use generalizations as we break them up if you'd like later on. We got two close ones at the very beginning, which I thought were pretty fair and were pretty much actually contestable draw fights in general. Then you get a fight that ends on a very awful headbutt because the headbutt pretty much bled into the guy's eye. I mean, that fight was going to be killed off immediately after that happened. And then we get in the main event with Brandon Lee, a fight where the guy, I think they even hinted about it on the Showbox stat line, where the guy didn't land a single punch. I mean, typical boxing stuff. I'm all for that. I'm actually fine with it. Outside of the scorecards, and I'm sure you started off from top to bottom too. The very beginning of the first card that was televised, I think they had an audio issue. And instead of us getting Farhood in the gang, we got the old school Raw tape form. I think you may have saw it at the very beginning. We got like the time code at the very bottom, the lower left hand corner. Yeah,
I learned so many people joking about that.
Yeah, I learned in high school TV production. That's the B-roll type, the tape for the timestamp for when you like, you know, want to go back and edit something. You go back to this nanosecond in this frame, and then you go to the other one on the B side where you edit it, and then you cut it around. But we got the actual Raw tape of that. I kind of enjoyed that for like the first two rounds of that first fight, actually. But then they changed it up and fixed the audio, so it was gone. But no, outside of that, I really thought this was a really solid Showbox card, actually. I have no complaints about outside of that anything otherwise. I'm just disappointed this is going to be the last time we have some U.S. boxing for a while more. It's just a general principle. But no, it was actually for a Showtime card, like, give or take, even throwing in the Showtime main event cards, this may have been the best Showtime card for me personally as a whole this year easily. Like, I'm just spitballing and thinking up top of my head. I mean, the fights at the beginning of the year they had at Atlantic City with Shields and Habazin, I mean, that card was okay. I mean, I like Boots Ennis. That's fine. But, like, then you start thinking, like, the cards after that where it's like, I mean, Rigondeaux, and then you got the yearly, which is now looking more and more like the actual yearly appearance of Garrett Russell Jr. Oh, I mean, that was okay.
That was okay, nothing spectacular. Danny Garcia card,
I was bored
never,
to tears.
I was never on board with that. I remember I looked at that card. I said it from the very beginning. I was not a fan of that card, the Danny Garcia card. Didn't think it was going to be great, and, you know, turns out that was the case. It really wasn't anything too special. So, really, I'd have to look at it real deeply, but you're right. I think this actually may have been the best Showtime televised card period of 2020 so far, which, depending on how you look at it, it could be a good thing, could be a bad thing. I mean, which is not something we all expect, because, hell, I mean, again, Dan, the Showtime card, yeah, Danny Garcia, Ivan Redcatch, this was an okay fight, but Stephen Fulton versus Arnold Kagai, I think I personally thought that was going to be a hell of a fight that really wasn't.
Not really.
Jared Herd versus Francisco Santana was a bit of a dud.
Herd got rounds in. I mean, that is what it was with that. But yeah, like, now that I'm thinking about, like, I really couldn't name anyone, like, yeah, Rigondeaux, Solis. I mean, the fight before that was pretty good, actually. I'm trying to think of the guy's name. That's going to escape me. But no, that fight was okay. But yeah, I mean, then you got Gary Russell Jr. versus King Tug. I mean, that was okay. I mean, that was okay for what it was. It's just not. Now, the only thing is interesting of that Danny Garcia Ivan Redcatch card was the fact that Redcatch bit Garcia and got his purse yanked because of it. That may have been the only event that happened in that entire fight card, looking back on it. And it's weird because, like, speaking of Showtime fight cards, like, they're still promoting, like, the other ones. Like, I mentioned even on the Showbox broadcast, they mentioned halfway through it, the Clarissa Shields, Marie Eve, the Claire fight that's opening in Flint, and I want to say in May. And they mentioned the Neri card happening at the end of the month, supposedly. I mean, we'll see how that turns out. I mean, it's like, we'll see. I mean, even that card has Lucas Brown back in action. Well, you know.
Oh, my God. The only reason I was interested in that fight was because you had Tom Schwartz fighting Lucas Brown. That is the only reason I was interested at all. But then Tom got injured, and I'm not going to lie, my interest in that fight card diminished significantly because I don't feel comfortable in Luis Neri making weight. Even at 122, I still am not fully convinced he makes weight. But because he brought it upon himself, because I don't, you know, I said it time and time again, he should never be allowed to fight 118 pounds ever again. I honestly agree with Marisa Suleiman when I remember a couple of months ago when they asked him about it. He said, you know, you shouldn't fight at 118. In fact, I would say don't even go to 122, go to 126, because you can tell he is better suited for 126 pounds instead of just trying to kill himself only to miss weight at 118.
Yeah, and it's something that, because I really think at the end of the day with Neri, I think he walks around either 130 or 135. It's the same theory I have with Carlos, with Gervonta Davis whenever he misses weight, where it's like, there's a reason why he had to move up. It's like, at some point, you just realize that you're not going to keep making this weight, and you just either accept it, or you can keep fighting reality, and these guys, of course, are still fighting reality. But yeah, it makes sense. It's funny that you mentioned Solomon, where it's one of the few times where it's like, all right, this guy's actually making sense when it doesn't involve talking about franchise titles or any of that stuff. And it's interesting that even he's saying, like, hey, man, you need to move up. And it's like, as you know, Carlos, when sanctioning bodies are having to be the voice of reason, it's very, very telling, that's all.
Yeah. So looking at this, going back to the Showbox card, so obviously we start off with Aram Avanyan versus Dagoberto Agüero. Dagoberto Agüero got off to a real good start. He dropped Avanyan twice, one time in the first round, one time in the second round. And then after that, Agüero just didn't show up. He was kind of lethargic. He pretty much abandoned almost everything that got him to success in the first couple of rounds. Aram did a great job coming back from those first two knockdowns, wins a majority decision. You know, I agree with the decision. I think a 76-74 card for Avagyan is a very good scorecard. And okay. Overall, I thought this was a very dramatic fight in the sense that we don't know what's going to happen with the scorecards late, because really, after those two knockdowns in an 8-round fight, like, all you need is one more round, and you pretty much have it guaranteed in the bag, one or two more rounds, and then he just didn't show, Agüero didn't show up, he just did not fight well, he pretty much allowed Avagyan to come back and outbox him. It was certainly very bizarre seeing someone score two knockdowns early in an 8-round fight and still lose on the scorecards.
Yeah, you know what's called? Now that I think about that, that's very rare you really think about it, because I think what happened with Aguero is that at the end of the day, he just ran out of gas. And you can see it, I want to say, in the fifth round, because by about the fourth round, like, the shots that he was throwing, like, didn't have any mustard or any heat on them. Because had he thrown that shot like in the third round, it probably would have knocked the Bio out again. And it was interesting where it's like, even the broadcast mentioned it too, where it's like they thought he was going to survive and just keep boxing around, but it looked like he was trying to land like that one shot and that didn't happen. He proceeded to get outboxed. It was just really interesting, the fact that, because actually I thought a draw would be fair, but 76-74, that's not the end of the world in terms of scorecards. It's just like really interesting that he really only prepared, it seems like, Carlos, for a solid four-rounder, despite the fact that this card was scheduled for an eight and it went the distance. Because by about the seventh or eighth round, he was out of gas. Like, at one point, I thought he was going to actually just fall out. And there was a shot in the seventh – I want to say it was in the seventh round where he got landed – where he was hit, and it was flush. And it could have been ruled a knockdown in the seventh round, actually, but apparently because his knee was down, but the ref didn't catch it. Either he didn't catch it or he just rolled a slip, whatever have you, but it was a slip and a punch, but it happens. And but at the end of the day, they got the scorecard right, so it's fair. But yeah, Guayo just really just not have any steam whatsoever. Like, the second half of that, it was really a tale of two fights where he had nothing in for the last four rounds of that one at all.
Yeah, the second fight, Alejandro Guerrero beats Jose Angulo by majority decision as well. 76-76, 79-73, 78-74. The story of this fight was not really the fight itself. It was those two scorecards. Like, a lot of people were really surprised by that. It was a lot more. I mean, Guerrero ended the fight very, very well. He totally hurt Angulo, and really he sent Angulo to the canvas, even though very late in the fight, even though the ref ruled it a slip and not a knockdown. But it was a very, you know, prior to the seventh round, it was pretty competitive for the most part. So it was, when you look at the fight and you can't, it is impossible for someone to really look at the fight and say, well, Angulo only won one round. It's very weird. I wasn't a fan of this, of those last two scorecards, but I agree that Guerrero, I think, slightly edged it on my scorecard. But, you know, I don't have a problem with the decision. I was just scratching my head when it comes to those last two scorecards.
Yeah, that part was weird too, because it was pretty competitive in terms of a back and forth. I really thought Guerrero, and it was one of those fights where it's like, I guess the guy who gave it 79-72 probably only won one round. I guess he liked the pressure that he was putting on, which I get, because that's kind of his style for the fight. But it doesn't justify him only winning one round. I don't know. I'm never a big fan of weird lopsided cards like that. Especially when the first guy had it as a draw, and it pretty much, even if you were watching the fight, it was pretty even throughout for essentially most of the fight. So it's one of those things where I used to always joke about, like, the only thing that's uncertainty about judging is the uncertainty of the judges, and that always is going to come to question when you see scorecards like that. And I wish. And it's one of those fights where I wish there was something where we had like a blueprint system for these judges in terms of, like, when they score these fights, what are they looking for? What do they need to look for? And what establishes winning a round? I know it's eye is judgmental. It's a beauty in the eyes of the beholder. But at the end of the day, this is some numbers when you come up with some of these cards that these guys put back in, especially like that card, or like, especially with some of these overcards, like, especially throughout the year in Texas, where we'll run into the same issue where it's like, or like the ones like in New York earlier this year, I think for that Jesse Hart, Jill Smith car where he gave the guy, the fight gave the guy, gave the car to a Jesse Hart. It's like, what are you looking at? It's always going to beg that question every time.
All right, co-main event. We kind of discussed this a little bit earlier on the show, very briefly. Brian Norman Jr. beats Flavio Rodriguez by technical unanimous decision. There was a bad clash of heads. Rodriguez got cut in the seventh round, and Norman won the fight. You know, in my eyes, I think Norman won the fight, 68-65 on two of the three scorecards, 69-64 on the third one. But I have no problem with who won the fight. I have a problem, and I don't know about you, I have a problem with this constant thing where on partial rounds, when they go to a technical decision, that they score the partial round as a whole thing. I have a major issue with that because it gets to a point where really anything can happen in a round on a moment's notice, and now you're telling me that you know, you're still going to, you know, score the whole round, even though it's not complete. I would just have scored the six rounds, period, and just forget about the seventh. It's very weird. I don't know why they keep doing this. I don't agree with it. I mean, Marquis, you and I have seen how many fights end with a guy going down and being knocked down the last 5 seconds of the round. We've seen that way too many times, and you're telling me that that's you're going to disregard that possibility because, well, the fight's over, but we still got to count the partial round. I don't agree with the idea that the seventh round had to be scored, but I agree with who won. I think Brian Norman Jr. looked really good against Flavio Rodriguez. I had someone actually tell me, like, out of all the prospects, like, he thought that Brian Norman Jr. was the one that actually looked the best at the end of the night.
No, that makes sense. And actually, no, I have a problem with them scoring that last round, too, especially with these scorecards. And I give you a great example last year when Marcus Brown lost to Gene Pasquale on that card because they judged the last round, which pretty much decided the fight, actually, as strange as that sounds. And it's like, what are you guys doing with this? Like, what's there to judge before the head clash? Which, like, I would never understand that either with terms of, like, what are they looking for with that? Like, who wins? Like, the person who starts the headbutt or who got the least end of it? Like, what are you judging that on too, either? But no, Norman looked pretty good, actually. And I'm going to disagree only in terms of Rodriguez of looking like the best prospect, only because I really do like Brandon Lee a lot, who was in the main event. But it was actually pretty interesting how he flashed out in terms of just a style of just for that fight itself. It's really strange that the headbutt that started that pretty much stopped the fight is just one of those cuts where when you run into each guy when heads clash like that, and whenever there's always going to be blood that runs from the top of the forehead that runs into the eye, like any ringside doctor that's worth his medical malpractice license is going to cut that fight off no matter what. That's even at the club level or even the bar fight level, like this is a done deal. So it's always interesting to see how fast and how quick they got responded to that. And they did the right call on that and stopping it though.
Now moving on to the main event, Brandon Lee beats Camilo Prieto, third round TKO. I mean, this one, we knew just how this was going to happen. You know, Brandon Lee, for those who don't know, tremendous, tremendous prospect. At junior welterweight, unbeaten, 19-0. He's only 20 years old, and he's only had like three dozen rounds as a pro. He's no Edgar Berlanga, where he's knocking dudes out every single time out in the first round, but he's a fantastic prospect. I certainly do like his ceiling. And the fact that he's only 19 fights in, he's 20 years old, I think it's a great sign of where he could potentially land as far as, you know, as a contender 2-3 years down the road. I look at Brandon Lee and think of this fight. I'm thinking, you know, I remember you at the start of the show, you were saying that the Showbox shows really are more showcase fights. And this fight was the very definition of a showcase fight. And I think given that the extra attention that the sports world had, especially with this card being one of the last live sporting events in the U.S. for a long time, potentially, you have to think that dude's ready for better competition. Like, he's not going to get better fighting guys like Camilo Prieto for another year, even if he's young, even if his body's still developing. And listen, and I'm not someone who basically is guy. I mean, look, he's young. You take advantage. Like, look, sometimes guys need to be properly seasoned, need to get experience. Not everyone's a Gervonta Davis or Kosei Tanaka or David Benavidez, where they're winning titles left and right at a young age. But I think with Brandon, it's a different case. I think he's ready for, you know, not necessarily a top 10 guy or top 15, but certainly someone much better than Camilo Prieto.
Absolutely, Carlos. And it's funny because I was talking to Brandon earlier in the week leading up to it, because he was doing the media rounds and stuff, talking about the fight. And the two questions I asked him about the fight was he looking to get rounds in against Prieto? And he flat out told me he's not here to dance. He's here to knock Prieto out, which I thought was pretty amusing. And the second thing was I mentioned in terms of stepping up competition for him. And he mentioned to me flat out that if he's just the horse that runs the stable and that Cameron Duncan, the people that promote for him, are the ones that pretty much will dictate that for him. So at this point, I think it's going to be on the promotion to either give him better competition instead of guys who, which I thought was a very funny, interesting tidbit, actually, Carlos, because Camilo Prieto, who lives in Miami, but has been fighting literally in the Dominican Republic exclusively, essentially, for like the last 4 years, and they found this guy. So I'm looking forward to seeing for the next time on Showbox, they give for Brandon an actual a live opponent. And it's interesting because, like, when Prieto came up, like, actually in the ring itself, throwing punches, like, you can just see, like, in the first 45 seconds of that fight that this was not going to go the distance. It was one of those things where you saw Brandon Lee do, like, the shuffle. He did the stick-out thing, like Roy Jones. It was like, okay, so he knows it's the main event. He knows it's going to close the show out. And that fight was only going to go as far as Brandon Lee wanted to. And about 2 minutes in the second, third round, he was like, all right, enough of this. And that was the end of it. It was really interesting, but I'm really hoping, because for Lee, he's just a decorated amateur. He's been fighting forever, it seems. I think his record as an amateur was like 196-5. It's something ridiculous. And he was telling me about how he's been training with like everyone out in California in terms of like the big names, the Mikey Garcias, the Haneys, the Boots Ennises, the Crawfords and everyone else, in terms of like just learning so much in terms of sparring and in preparation for all these fights, is that you would have thought they would have gave them for Showbox someone just, I don't know, someone who could land a punch, maybe, Carlos? Maybe that's just me on that part. But I get it. I mean, it was part of the program. It's part of his development. I'm sure not trying to rush him like everybody else. I mean, not everyone else is Gervonta Davis, as you mentioned before, where you can just start putting him in against big competition and he just starts overpowering all of them. But I am hoping the next fight that he has this year, because he does plan on being active like he always is, like he was last year, that they do put him in with someone who can at least either at a lightweight or either his natural weight, just someone just he can actually get some rounds in some competition-wise. But all in all, I'm a big Brandon Lee guy. He's fun to watch, and he's been mauling everybody over, Carlos. I mean, it's one of those deals where it's like at some point you have to put him in with someone real.
Well, there's not much time left on this podcast, but we have some breaking news.
Yes.
So, and it's not going to be, and it's kind of basically, it kind of really makes the last 10 minutes of our coronavirus situation moot. But according to Mike Coppinger on Twitter, the Nevada State Athletic Commission has suspended all combat sporting events indefinitely due to COVID-19. Canelo Saunders cannot be scheduled until the ban is lifted. And this would also mean shows with PBC, Top Rank, that they got in Las Vegas, not happening until the ban is lifted. And it's an indefinite ban. So we could be looking at two weeks down the line. We could be looking at 1 month down the line. We could be looking at 3 months down the line and not have anything in Vegas. This actually might be the strongest stance a commission has had in the U.S. when it comes to these types of things. Because I don't know if you noticed, but a lot of the commissions around the U.S. have really been following what the state itself has been ordering. Now, I don't know if the Nevada Commission is made the decision on their own, or if they were following what the state maybe are saying. But if this was something the commission itself has decided, I gotta say, I commend them 100%. I know sometimes it's easy to rag on the Nevada State Commission for a number of things. A lot of it deservedly so. But if they were the ones who made this decision on their own, kudos to them.
Absolutely, and if that's breaking, that's huge as well, which automatically throws out, as you well know, Carlos, besides Canelo Sanders being tossed out in May, that also throws away out the in April the top-ranked card that was going to bring a monster in, well, I don't think, or anyway, against Cashanero as well, which is being held at the Mandalay in Vegas. So if pretty much if Nevada's shutting down, more than likely, Carlos, this the dominoes for this is going to fall at some point. So there's not going to be any boxing in the United States unless it's unsanctioned or it's on someone's Instagram, which is not exactly sanctioned either. So there's going to be no boxing, essentially, if Nevada came through with this. Props to them for actually stepping up and doing something, because let's be honest, Carlos, they are known for not exactly taking the most hardline stance, unless it's Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. Avoiding a drug test. Outside of that, the Nevada Olympic Christian has pretty much been a walking punchline in boxing since I can remember, even covering sports media. So it's interesting that they're taking the stance on this, which means everybody else is as well. I mean, California already has, New York has already with their cards being canceled. Now it's Nevada. Those are the big three. That means all Texas already canceled their fight cards as well. So when the major players step in and say no, then all everyone's going to follow suit, because it's at this point it's just a safety and liability issue, and it's like no one, because it's at the end of the day, Carlos, no one knows what's going on with this, and until we figure out what's going on with it, we just can't. They can't risk it, and there's no liability or reassurance for it. So I applaud them for that, but man, well, so if anything else, we'll have a. Something else to do until they figure that out, all this stuff out fight wise. But man, that is big news.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, that about does it for this edition of the Fightful Boxing Podcast. I mean, look, there's a lot. I don't know what's gonna happen with this podcast. You know, maybe I will do something special in the coming weeks to sort of. You know, to sort of make up for the fact that there's going to be no boxing. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens in the coming weeks and months. I have no idea what's going to happen. No one knows what's going to happen. That's really the scary part, but I think I speak for a lot of people when I say I hope this gets resolved pretty quickly so that the world can kind of go back to some level of, you know, normality. Because it's crazy. Marquez, you have any plugs you want to throw out there for the people?
Absolutely, Carlos. Yeah, just to piggyback off your point as well, I hope we get back to normalcy, as you know, as well, too, Carlos. Because as you know, we all use sports as a distraction to get away from the stuff like this. And when the distraction is gone, we have nothing else to focus on but this. So until we figure this all out and it goes away, we'll other than just sit and wait and be patient about it. But you can always find me, Carlos, and everybody else that's listening at Weak Sauce Radio, all one word. Still one of my favorite Twitter handles all ever. It's a long-running inside gag on my end. Pretty much covering boxing on my end with everything else with everybody, mixing it up, talking stuff, arguing like everybody else on boxing Twitter. When's Crawford going to fight Spence, and et cetera, like all those other goons. You can join me there. You can also find me at BigFightWeekend.com is the boxing site that I write for. I usually write stories every so often, and news and tidbits and anything that I find interesting that I keep up with past, present, and future in the world of boxing. And with this current coronavirus situation going on, there's going to be a lot of past going on in the next couple of weeks at the website, I can tell you now.
And you can follow me on Twitter at CarlosDora360. Head on over to Fightful.com for all the latest news regarding pro wrestling, MMA, and boxing. Subscribe to our Fightful MMA and Boxing YouTube channel and subscribe to our Apple podcast. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in, and I hope to see you on the next one.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com. Fightfulboxing.com.
This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and diminished our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make a variety of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more. All made right here in the USA, from growing the cotton to adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.